2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
DFS Army members, and welcome to the Taco Tuesday PGA DFS podcast, brought to you by DFSArmy.com, your number one resource for DFS advice, spreadsheets, articles, podcasts, you name it. We've got it. Sign up today at DFSArmy.com for access to our weekly cheat sheet for both PGA and the European Tour. It's got full course history, recent form, odds aggregated from several different sportsbooks, and my signature field-adjusted statistics to show you just how golfers have really been playing without the biases that come with using season-long numbers. You also get access to all of our content in other daily fantasy sports, and my favorite resource, the DFS Army Slack chat, where we work together as a community to help build better lineups. So go to DFSArmy.com and use the promo code TACO for 20% off. Okay, so this week we're headed to Arnie's tournament, the Arnold Palmer Invitational at Bay Hill, and for the first time ever, Arnie himself will not be there on the 18th hole on the final round to congratulate the winner like he always does, because he passed away last year. Very unfortunate, and it's kind of sad to see how not a lot of the American studs, you know, the Jordan Spieths and the Dustin Johnsons of the world are showing up to this tournament. But there's still a lot of big names in this tournament. It should be a really good one. Bay Hill Club and Lodge is a 7,400-yard par 72. It averages about a half stroke under par, so it's kind of in the middle as far as all the PGA Tour courses are concerned as far as, like, accuracy. And there's really nothing that sticks out, like eagle numbers, birdie numbers. They're all just pretty middle of the road. The greens are pretty large, but the stimp meter on those greens are just kind of average, if not a little bit under average. So these Bermuda greens, kind of normal. There's not really much to think about there. It is a very low average drive distance and only 277 yards, so it's a less than driver course for sure. It's just kind of by the way the fairways are set up. They're really wide. Like shorter on, you can get into trouble if you hit it too far. A lot of these holes just kind of force you to take out your 3-wood or maybe even an iron instead of going through driver. So that'll benefit a lot of people for sure. And the driving accuracy last year was 65%, which was one of the better marks of any course on tour. And a lot of that does have to do with the less than driver off of the tee. So just another angle to look at here. I wouldn't give the advantage to driving distance or driving accuracy as much, although I would probably lean a little more towards accuracy, but with it being a less than driver course, the numbers kind of go out the window a little bit. I guess I would look at strokes gained off the tee or total driving just to get a good sense of that, because it is kind of a longer course, but you'll need to stay in the fairway for sure because the roughs are pretty rough. I found scrambling to be really important when looking at past winners here. Really, you see a lot of accurate-type players, but the key thing with all of the players that have done here well in the past are they're all really good scramblers, and if they do miss the fairways, then they can get out of trouble pretty easily. And, you know, a lot of those good scramblers just so happen to also be very accurate drivers. So that's kind of the angle to go at here. But I'm really mostly concerned about good scrambling, good approach game, as always. I mean, that always helps. Really, you want to be Tiger Woods at this course, because this is a course that Tiger Woods just absolutely dominated. He won 8 times. I think he won, in the early 2000s, he won 4 times in a row here, so I'm sure if prime Tiger Woods was on DraftKings, he would be like like $13,000 or $14,000, and you'd probably be very happy to pay for them then, because you knew who's going to win. So, you know, a lot of the course history here, there are a lot of people with good course history here, but none as insane as Tiger, obviously, but there are definitely some course horses in the field this week for sure, but it's definitely not as much of a course history course as, like, last week's was. There are really just a handful, and other than that, it's kind of up and down. When you're looking at the stats that you're targeting this week, I think a lot of what you're really looking for is, like, player pedigree. It's a really strong field, and there are a lot of underpriced guys, so, you know, the pricing has kind of softened up a bit, as we can usually expect with, you know, a softer field, or a larger field. They usually do that to kind of bring people in, but a lot of these plays are made for you just by some of the ridiculous pricing, but otherwise, when you're looking for stats, you really just want to focus on player pedigree, people that perform well in good fields, things like that. So let's get on to the top plays here, which is Rory McIlroy and Henrik Stenson. Up, Rory's at 12K and Henrik Stenson's at 11.5. Now, for, like I always say, if someone's 12,000, then you definitely want their odds to be under 10-1, and Rory is coming in anywhere between 7.5 to 8-1 odds, so that's not bad for a 12K guy. Rory is pretty much a threat to win any tournament. He's obviously probably the world's number one golfer. You know, disregard the world golf rankings, he's probably the most talented golfer, maybe tied with Dustin Johnson, or right there with Dustin Johnson. But as far as this field is concerned, he's certainly the best golfer in the field. So for 12,000, and maybe if Jordan Spieth was in this field, I'd have a problem with it. But since Spieth isn't, and only Stenson and Day and Matsuyama, as far as like the super, super studs are in there, I think you can safely consider Rory the favorite here. And I probably don't have much of an issue with playing Rory. He's made the cut both times he's played here and done well. That's kind of to be expected. He finished 7th at the World Golf Classic in Mexico. He's someone that can, you know, run away with it, obviously. I'm probably not going to use him a whole lot, obviously, because, you know, it's a field of Stenson in it, and Stenson is quite the course horse here, but, you know, I think a lot of people will be drawn to Stenson here for sure, just because of his ridiculous course history, so the most expensive guys I know are never going to go under-owned, but, you know, with DraftKings being more of an American kind of sport, I know they have DraftKings in Europe, but it's not really that popular there. If it was, then I'd say avoid Rory, because he's kind of like, you know, Tiger Woods over there, but since it's mostly an American thing, I don't think people are going to be overwhelmingly on Rory. So he can make for a really sharp GPP pivot just off of Stenson. And going into Stenson, he just has ridiculous course history here. He's never missed the cut. 4 straight top 8 finishes. 3rd last year, 2nd the year before that. Just, he's a monster at this course. He absolutely owns Bay Hill. And this is the tournament I'm always very excited to use him just a ton in. I mean, he's my favorite golfer, so I use him a ton in pretty much every tournament. But here, like, I roll like 100% Stenson, and you pretty much have to decide either, you know, you fade him or you just play him a ton. Obviously, he's locked into cash games for sure, just with ridiculous course history. But, you know, at 11.5, even if he finishes like 8th, you can probably be safe going down cheaper if you can find, like, the winner, just, like, studs that do better. But if he finishes top 2 or 3, you probably do need him. 11.5 is kind of expensive, and they kind of bait you with some cheaper studs up here, but Stenson has to be the way to go in cash, and he's just going to be chalky in GPP. Moving on to the defending champion and Jason Day at 10,600. This is a pretty fair price for him. Great course history overall, but obviously won last year. This is kind of a course where he's set up to succeed very well. He's an excellent scrambler, so he doesn't really need to stay, you know, in the fairway. But great putter, great scrambler. That's a lot of what we're looking for here. Obviously, his driving accuracy sucks because he's Jason Day, but you know, as long as he can scramble out of it, he's fine. So, nothing wrong with picking Day at all. I think he'll be semi-popular. His form had been kind of questionable, but he did finish 5th at Pebble Beach. Hasn't played in a few weeks, but I'm not really concerned about him. He's the world number 2 golfer right now. You know, the last 2 seasons of his have just been absolutely fantastic. He's obviously a threat to win, especially at a place where he won last year. 14-1 odds at 10,600. It's not terrible. I think more people go with Hideki Matsuyama at 10,300, right underneath him. Great scrambler, really great short game overall. May not be the best putter, but he's actually been kind of okay at putting compared to how he usually is. And obviously, he was in that ridiculous form to start like the swing season into the beginning of the season. Won the Waste Management. 6th here last year, so also comparable course history to Jason Day there. And you know he birdies a ton. He's always going to be a threat to, you know, compete on Sunday. And he obviously has a killer instinct, so nothing wrong with going Matsuyama either there. I think Day and Matsuyama are kind of interchangeable as far as, like, you know, my GPP exposure will be. So nothing wrong with Day, nothing wrong with Matsuyama. Ricky Fowler at 9,900. I think he's a pretty good play here. Obviously in fantastic form. Finished 3rd here in 2013. I think he fits the course very, very well, honestly. Pretty good scrambler. Just great overall tee to green game. Great at avoiding bogeys and, you know, just the whole package. I think he's fairly priced. He's usually a little bit overpriced. But 9,900, I think that's really fair for someone who just recently won. And that was in a pretty good field at the Honda Classic. And even before they finished 4th at the Waste Management. Really like Ricky a lot this week. And you're not going to hear me say that, like, ever. Not the best putter. But sort of like Rory, who's also not a great putter. Not really concerned about it this week with the greens being fairly easy, and a lot of the scoring come from the par 5s where all you need to really do is lag it in. So I like Fowler. I like Rose too. I mean, obviously I'm going to like all these studs, but Rose is in a really good spot. Has 3 top 10s in his last 5 times he's placed here, and actually 4 top 15s in his last 5 times here as well. They did miss the cut in 2014. So far this season, he's looked really great. Made the cut every single time. 3 top 5 finishes. Rose is pretty much, you know, not like a super, super stud, but just really solid. Someone you want to look at in cash at 9,500. Really safe. Just good overall game. You know, I don't see his kind of under average putting really holding him back here. Just another solid choice. Really, you just have... I don't think spending is going to be a problem here, because you're going to want really a large handful of these studs up top. A lot of the questions you'll really have in this slate are choosing which, like, mid-tier and value guys you want, because all of these studs, they really look like they're priced fairly. You know, pricing's a little soft, and then they're all kind of good fits for the course. I think the people that wouldn't have been good fits for the course, they kind of skipped this week. Because you do notice a lot, usually this field is a lot stronger. This is usually almost like a major, but I don't know why people just skipped on this event this year, so that's kind of weird. With a strong field, you've obviously got Louis Oosthuizen, who has showed up to play. If you look at just odds to pricing, it looks like he's in a terrible spot, just 200 cheaper than Rose. He has played once here and finished top 10, so that's kind of nice, but... I don't know. He's 49-1 compared to Rose, who's 200 more and is 20-1. So that should kind of speak for itself. But I think Oosthuizen's a pretty fair play still. He always does well in very strong fields. That's just something you know about Oosthuizen from the get-go. He's not going to be popular. Obviously, people are going to go to Rose and Fowler. But maybe in GPP, it makes for kind of a strong pivot just because he loves to finish top 10s at strong fields. but I wouldn't go anywhere near him in cash, obviously. Now, at 9,100, I expect Tyrrell Hatton to be a really popular name. He's a top 10 machine, both overseas and in the PGA Tour. He's came over recently, played two of the last three events at the Honda Classic and the WGC there in Mexico, and finished top 10 in both of them. He is a superb scrambler. Doesn't show it as far as his PGA stats are, but if you look at his European Tour stats, he's an absolutely superb scrambler, and there's a much, much larger sample size of his European work, but you know that's a good part of his game. Very, very accurate. Not the longest driver, but very accurate driver of the ball. Just great ball striker. Awesome putter. The best putter of anyone 9,000 and above. He seems like someone that's going to be popular and for good reason. He's a top 20 golfer in the world, and I think the whole him coming from Europe and not being very popular thing is kind of gone with his two top 10 finishes here in America. So people are going to know who he is. People are going to roster him, and you probably should too. On to Brant Snedeker. Last three times here, he's done pretty well, but kind of questionable course history before then. Obviously, this season, he has three top 10s and two missed cuts, so he's a real hit or miss for sure. Statistically, he just looks bad. But that's kind of been something I've noticed about him his entire career. He does not look good statistically ever, but he just knows how to put it all together and win any given week. You know, good scrambler, good putter. Obviously, he makes his bank putting constantly, and he prefers Poa Nua greens, I guess, to Bermuda, but he's still pretty good with Benua. Bermuda. It's a bent grass I would avoid Snedeker at, so not really concerned about that there. Nothing wrong with him. I think he'll be kind of under-owned. Going on to Paul Casey, top 10 finish here last year. Great ball striker. He started the season, and, like, you know, he had that amazing fall season. Awesome during the FedEx Cup. He looked like one of the best golfers in the world. And then just started the season like crap, but he's really caught on the last 2 weeks. Or the last two events he's played. 11th at the Honda and 16th at the WGC event in Mexico. So he's someone that once he starts to get hot, you really want to be on Casey. So I like Casey a lot this week. I'm going to be going there for sure. He's probably going to be, you know, at 8,800. He's going to be probably a core play for me. He's just an awesome ball striker. I think he fits this course just perfectly. And I think a lot of his ownership will be eaten up by the two guys underneath him. And that would be Thomas Peters at 8,700 and Francisco Molinari at 8,600. Now, Peters actually played here last year and made the cut, but then finished dead last of anyone that finished, or that made the cut. He was still pretty raw. You know, he's a really young guy, but if you look at his finishes since he went over to the PGA Tour, it's kind of similar to Hatton there. Two top five finishes and a missed cut, so that's kind of what I expect from him here. I think he's either going to do amazing or just crap the bed, so pure GPP or GPP play, obviously. Kind of worried about his scrambling numbers, because it seems like he gets most of his statistics from approach shots. You know, he looks like an amazing approach shot artist, but that's only from a couple tournament games, obviously. You know he's a bomber, and that actually is not shown so far, just looking at the field-adjusted stats here. But we've only got two events of data on him, so I'm not entirely sure about that. You know, long-term from looking at the European Tour, he's a bomber, and the only thing I really worry about is his scrambling. He putts pretty well, but you know, those stats are from two top five finishes. Rhea's obviously feeling it. Will he feel it again this week? I don't know. It's a really, really strong field for him. 8,700 just feels really expensive. Like, that would be, you know, like a European Tour price for him, you know? I'd much rather go to Francisco Molinari in this spot. 8,600, awesome track record here. 4 out of 4 cuts made, 3 top 20 finishes, 2 top 10 finishes in that span. 9th last year. Excellent ball striker, very accurate, you know, kind of what we're looking for here. Good putter, although that hasn't shown on the PGA Tour, but you know, from the European Tour, he's a top putter year to year. Absolutely phenomenal form. If you look at his PGA Tour finishes, he's finished top 20 in 4 of his 5 events that he's played since going from the European Tour over to the PGA Tour. And in the European Tour, the last we saw of him, his last, like, 7 events were all, like, top 7 finishes. It was crazy. So, he's been on a roll, and even though the PGA Tour events are a little harder, it hasn't really stopped him. He's just looking quite amazing. So, Molinari, it's a nice mixture of form meets course history meets course fit. So, at 8,600, I expect him to be popular. Very popular in cash games. And even the guy underneath him, Zach Johnson, 8,500, his form had been kind of a little bit suspect as of late, but that course history here do not lie. Made his last 6 cuts, 2 straight top 10 finishes, and you know, just another accurate, great putter, scrambler kind of guy. Really liked Zach Johnson a lot. You know, you don't need the power, and he obviously lacks power, but you do not need power here with this being a less than driver course. So, a lot of reasons to like Zach Johnson, and for some reason, I think he's going to go under-owned. So, kind of like him in tournaments, and for cash games, you know, put him with Molinari. Why not? He's always a great cash game play. And right underneath him is last week's winner, Adam Hadwin. His 2017 season so far has been just spectacular. You know, he had that 58 early on at the Career Builder, and he's made every single cut, second at the Career Builder, obviously won last week, made the cut here last year, didn't do really that well, but he did make the cut in his first event here. Hadwin, someone sort of like Kisner last year, that has gone from being sort of a, you know, kind of scrubby type player to really just breaking out and having a superb season. Really, I don't know, 8,400, he's finally priced correctly. DraftKings, for the longest time, would refuse to price him anywhere near where he ought to be, and now I think he's fairly priced. If you want to get off of him the week after a win, nothing wrong with that at all, but I expect him to still be a little bit popular after, you know, just dominating last week, and it really seems like a course where he could have some success, so that's Hadwin for you. Brendan Grace at 8,300. If you look at just his odds to win compared to everyone else in this range, looks like a really crappy play. And statistically, he's been pretty crappy as well. Not a good scrambler or anything, so I don't like him. I think people will be gravitated towards, obviously, Hadwin above him, but then also Ryan Moore underneath him at 8,200. He's been awesome. Just look at the last 6 months. His form's been there. Last 3 times of this tournament, he's done terribly, but before then, he seemed like someone who was going to be a course horse here, you know? Finished 4th in 2012. His odds stick out in this range, which will always make a player popular. And Moore is someone that you can, you know, kind of chalk up as a good pick for this course, good ball striker, good scrambler, putter, you know, all that. It's just what we're looking for this week, so like Ryan Moore. 8,100, they finally priced Martin Laird correctly, a former winner here in 2011. I just don't think that 8,100 is a fair price anymore. With the price bump, I know this year it seems like he's either, you know, missed the cut or finished top 10. He has 3 top 10 finishes this year and 3 missed cuts or MDF finishes, so and kind of proceed with caution there. He's really, I don't know, it's like the last 2 years or so, Laird seemed to always just finish like T50 every single week, always make the cut. He's kind of just completely changed how he is. He's making top 10s, which is weird for him. He's also missing cuts, which is weird for him. So, don't really know what to make of Laird. Kevin Chappell at 8,000, rounding out these $8,000 guys. Runner-up here last year, but he's been in absolutely miserable form this year. Just terrible, so I don't know what to make of him. No freaking clue. So, as we hit the $7,000 range, if you're using the cheat sheet, you can kind of just look at the odds compared to the pricing of everyone around them, and I think the plays are going to be super, super obvious this week. Let's start off with Kevin Na at 7,600. Super course horse here, like, wow. Sixth in 2015, he didn't play here last year. Pretty much top 20 every single year. So you kind of want to lock and load with him. If you're starting to see a trend, hopefully, with all these, you know, course horses, at least as we get to the last of them, they're all people who normally are kind of held back by a lack of distance, but can fully utilize their ball striking at a course where the driver is just absolutely not necessary. But another guy who actually is a great driver that has a good course history here too, Jason Kokrak at 7,900, finished top 24 years in, or 3 years in a row, T4 in 2014, T6 in 2015. So that's pretty interesting. And also Keegan Bradley right under him, second in 2014, third in 2013, made four cuts in a row. Kind of interesting, you know. Would like to point out Emiliano Grillo, although you can play Emiliano Grillo if you want. I'm just worried about his form. But Alexander Noren at 7,700, 11th ranked golfer in the world, did not look that great in his PGA debut at the WGC, or WGC. T55 there looked really crappy. But a very interesting guy because he is a winner. He won four tournaments in eight tournaments played overseas, so he knows how to turn on the jets when it's time. So someone you want to sprinkle of in GPP. At 7,600, you've got last week's big winner, Tony Finau. He actually led the tournament in driving accuracy, and for a raw bomber guy like him, that's very intriguing. If you look at the field-adjusted statistics, not only is he a much longer driver than the field, he's also an extremely accurate driver, which is a very surprising mix. His stats are off the charts right now. His odds stick out like a sore thumb at 51-1 compared to all the other people around him in the 90s. Finau should be a chalk play. I don't know if he will be, but he ought to be. Great play. Maybe Kevin Na will steal some of his ownership there, but you cannot go wrong with either of those guys. Also like Kisner at 7,600. Awesome form that he's in. And you know he's a great scrambler, putter, accuracy guy, you know, the whole shebang. And then right there in that price range, you've got, what in the universe do you do with Bubba Watson? You know, Bubba Watson is 7,500. Like, oh, how the mighty have fallen. But his form right now is just so ridiculously questionable. There's no way to know what to do with him. Maybe just play him in one lineup just in case. But who knows with him? Jesus, who knows? At 7,400, you see some very obvious European value with Charles Schwartzel, former major winner, and T6 last week. Although he was defending a win last week, but still, Charles Schwartzel at 7,400, that's a crime. Then you've got Martin Kaymer, 7,400 as well, and absolutely phenomenal form. I had pointed this out in a previous podcast, but Kaymer has something like, I don't know, if I had to guess, it'd be something like 18 of 20 events where he finished top 20 in the European Tour. Then he comes overseas to America and finishes T4 and then T23. Like, the dude's crazy good. Not the best scrambler, though. Kind of worried about that with scrambling being so important here. But other than that, his statistics are fantastic. Not the longest off of the driver, and that's actually kind of a positive here, so love Kaymer, but he's never played the course before. Another course horse here is Sean O'Hare. Now, Sean O'Hare started the season off fantastic and has kind of hit a brick wall ever since WGC. Withdrew last week and finished almost dead last at the WGC, so a little bit concerned there, but true course horse. five straight made cuts in a row, finished T2 in 2009. Maybe someone, I don't know if he's really a cash game play, 'cause he loves to withdraw so much, but you know, someone you'll want to have some exposure to just because he has a nose for making the cut here. Tommy Fleetwood really sticks out at 7,200. He was T2 obviously at the WGC event. His first time overseas, I think ever. Not entirely sure. We saw him won that really stat, or let me rephrase here. We saw that he won that really stacked Abu Dhabi field back in the European Tour, but that was a really crazy stacked field. Like, I had Dustin Johnson and Ricky Fowler and all of them in there, and he came out of there victorious, and T2 at the WGC, like, the dude is a baller. He's great. 60-1 odds. At the cheaper than Smiley Kaufman is 286-1 odds. Like, yeah, sign me up here. I don't think he'll be popular. There's not a lot of really info on him outside of his T2 at WGC, although his average fantasy points per game might look, you know, really high to people just scrolling through, but I don't think his ownership will be that high anyway. Love the play, but, you know, still a little bit risky, still kind of unproven. He's only played one tournament overseas, and it wasn't even in Americas, in Mexico, but still, like him a lot. And at 7,100, Wesley Bryan, three straight top seven finishes. Had the two T4s in a row at the Honda and the Genesis, and then, you know, we were thinking, oh, is this finally real? I mean, he started the season off with three straight missed cuts. We thought this guy was a web.com fluke. You know, he obviously dominated the web.com tour, but he had that T7 last week at Valspar, and we're like, oh, crap. That's a bunch of top tens in a row, dude. You go, dude. 50-1 odds, 7,100. He's got to be one of the chalk values of the week. And he is an excellent scrambler. And that is absolutely what I'm looking for. You know, accurate guy. His putting skills haven't really been shown that much. If you're looking at the PGA Tour stats. But he absolutely dominated putting in the web.com tour. So I think that's someone that's going to... that's something that's going to definitely be showing up for him eventually, especially if he keeps on this crazy path that he's on right now, but definitely someone to strongly consider. Graham McDowell has looked really good in his last two tournaments, finishing T14 in both of them. He's at 7,000. Missed his last two cuts here, but before that he had three straight made cuts, including a T10 and a second place finish. So kind of interesting there. You know he's really short off the tee, but that won't matter here. Good scrambler, good putter, all that. So another person to consider. Good at greens regulation, too. I like Billy Horschel a lot. I know he missed the cut last week, but 7,000, made every single cut here. And T20 last year. And, you know, he's great at greens and regulation. Better than anyone this entire range. So I like him a lot. Greens and regulation is one of those stats that arguably one of the most important stats in all of golf. So that's something that always leads me to Billy Horschel a lot. Now, as we head into the $6,000 range, there's just one play that's just absolutely ridiculous. I think everyone, their grandma, their grandma's cat, and the mouse that the grandma's cat's chasing around is going to put in their roster this week. I think maybe it won't be as high as I suspect just because you have to scroll down a bit into the 6,000s to even find this guy, but my God, if he's not like 80% owned in cash, then something's wrong with people playing cash games. But Charles Howell III, 6,900, what the hell? He makes the cut here every single year. He's like the ultimate course horsey guy. He's got like eight different courses he's a course horse at, and this is one of them. He never finishes better than T20, but he never finishes worse than T50. He's like always in this range of just like, it's so obvious you need to lock him into cash this week, and you don't even need to think about it for 1 second. He's made every cut this year, usually finishing in the top 15. T49 last week, not the most encouraging of a finish, but just, it's ridiculous how underpriced he is this week. Like, Jesus, DraftKings, make up your mind about him. Like, he was finally priced fairly, and then they go back to just severely underpricing him again. They've done that, I think, three times this year, so don't know what the deal is there. At the same price, you have Brooks Koepka, and obviously his form is terrible. If this was last year and he was 6,900, he'd be the most popular play on the slate, but missed three of five cuts, hasn't had a better finish than T42, so very concerned about him. But statistically, he is the best on all the PGA Tour at the short par fives, and all three of the par fives are short this week, so maybe that's an angle to take with him. I like taking some shots at Brooks and GPP formats for sure at 6,900. I mean, why not? It's so cheap. And you know what Koepka is capable of. He can certainly put up a ton of birdies. It's just, he's got to just watch out for those blow-up holes, which always end up getting to him. But nonetheless, like Koepka this week. And for the same price, you have a very, very, very awkward situation that you run into. Matt Every, two-time winner here. He won in 2014 and followed it up with a win in 2015. Since then, his form is like Bowditch levels of awful. Like, just absolutely ridiculously awful. He is the trap of all traps. Let everyone else roster him. People looking at course history and going, oh, this guy's won here twice. No, he missed the cut here last year. He's missed every single cut this year. And he's played in eight events just trying to desperately get his tour card. And the only event he didn't miss the cut at miserably was the Honda Classic where he withdrew. Like, no, don't play Matt Every. Don't even think about it. For the same price, obviously you could get Howell. That's where everyone should go here. But you could also get Roberto Castro for pretty cheap. And also Camilo Villegas, which I know he's not the greatest player, but he's gotten a really good course history here. And kind of fits the course a lot. Great scrambler, good approach game. So kind of sneaky. I don't think anyone's going to be on Villegas. And then you also have Jenghoon Wang, who gets a lot of wins on the PGA Tour. He doesn't make a lot of cuts, but when he does, he has a nose for wins. Sort of like a super, super cheap version of Norin, just without the eliteness. At 6,800, I like Poulter a lot. He's got five top 21 finishes in his last six times here. He's made his last six cuts as well, T3 in 2012. He's only played twice in America so far this year, made the cut both times. At 6,800, why not? Moving on down to these cheaper plays, as we near the bottom here, it's time to stop ignoring Lucas Glover. Like, he's been great all year, made all five of his cuts, T21 at the Honda Classic, and then T18 last week. He's pretty good at this course, too. And if you just look at the odds to pricing compared to everyone else in this range, 90-1, and he's less expensive than Tim Herron, who's like 800-1. So, yeah, Glover looking pretty good right about now. Obviously, you know, he missed the cut in 2015, but T14 the year before that and T27 last year. Now, if you think about 2015... something you know about Lucas Glover is that he had a putting problem that was worse than almost any we had seen before. Like, he had amazing stats, just he was by far the worst putter on tour, and it was not close. Like, he couldn't putt to save his life. Now he's just kind of an average putter. If you look at the field-adjusted statistics, he is just barely under average to the field, so with all of his tee-to-green stats just being so elite, and his green and regulation game for sure, his average putting, we will take that absolutely. So you can really just toss the 2015 result out, and he does pretty well here, even a T11 in 2009. So I'll take his form, I'll take his course history, and at 6,700, yeah, that's a strong play. Honor Ben Lahiri, also kind of similarly good if you look at the odds. T11 last time out at Honda Classic. I like him a lot. 6,700. Fire him up, why not? Now, we're kind of nearing the bottom of this range here. If you really want to take the course history angle, Ben Martin has finished T12 last year and T5 the year before that, but his form is crap. At 6,600, it seems really cheap for Charlie Hoffman. And he finished T6 at the Genesis, just missed the cut last week, so I think he's just really underpriced. There's nothing that really makes you want to play him here exactly, but it's just the pricing is really unfair for a golfer like him. Patrick Rogers at 6,600 also. He's played this course once and finished T20 here last year. Other than that, he's been really up and down this season, either posting a great finish or a missed cut, and missing the cut more often than not. But just trying to help you guys think of some ideas up in here. Do not play Robert Gamez. I think if you're to take anyone on the slate besides maybe Stephen Bowditch, you might actually want to pick Bowditch just over Gamez, because Gamez is. Let's try to think of a term for this. What is the opposite of a course horse? He's like a course dead horse. I don't know. I'm not feeling creative right about now, but he's played here every single year, and every single year he misses the cut. Like, just don't play him. I would be very surprised if anyone rostered him in any sort of like DraftKings format. It's just ridiculous to want to play him, so. Anyway, Rob Oppenheim at minimum, or not minimum, minimum 6,400. Oh, no, minimum's moved up to 6,500 this week, but at minimum price, Rob Oppenheim finished T20 here last year, and this year we've only seen him twice. He missed the cut at the Genesis Open, but the week before that at Pebble Beach, he finished T8. Now, he's not long off the tee at all, looking statistically. But he's a great scrambler and pretty decent at driving accuracy, and I think that can be a little bit sneaky here. No one's going to own him. He's going to be like 0.02% owned, but my sneaky pick has to be either him at 6,500 or Derek Fathauer. Finished T12 here last year, but is definitely in worse form than Oppenheim. But one of those two guys. Super sneaky at min price. And then if I was forced to pick anyone else at min price, I guess it'd be Brandon Hagee, just because he can bomb the ball a mile. And his last two finishes on tour, T21 and T33, so why not there? Not going to mess with any of these other minimum price guys. That's pretty crazy. So that wraps up the player segment of this, and I guess just on to lineup construction. I don't really know actually a lot this week. I haven't made a whole lot of lineups yet, but I know that Stenson's going to be super popular, and people will probably try to jam in two studs. They're obviously going to play Howell, and then the rest is going to. I think that people are going to be popular this week. Just these course horses. I think Kevin Na is going to be popular. I think Zach Johnson and Molinari, especially Molinari, are going to be very popular. So, in tournaments, I don't know exactly how I'm gonna approach it, but I don't know if I'm gonna be fading these guys completely or maybe just taking different combinations of them. But there's probably a good case to be made for just kind of fading the at least a handful of the course history guys and maybe going heavier or some other guys. And maybe even I don't even know if guys like Schwartzel or Kiemer, are going to be too popular. Maybe look at people who've got great odds but are coming from like the European Tour, and ownership levels of them will be kind of jilted down just by the not having the greatest player recognition, the name recognition. Although, it's hard to really argue that for Schwartzel, who's won a damn major, but no, won the Masters, but nonetheless, if you really want to be different just in lineup construction, usually I'd recommend going like studs and scrubs, but maybe this week is a week where you could go, you know, just take Howell off, or take Howell, obviously, unless you're going to fade him, and then just kind of go mid-range, because outside of Rory and Stenson and Day and Matsuyama, you know, it's not like all of the studs are here and you have like 20 to choose from and a stud is certainly going to win. I do feel like this is a tournament where a win is not necessarily guaranteed to any stud, and actually Stenson's never won this despite his ridiculous course history, so I could see a win going to like one of these like $8,000 or even $7,000 guys. I think that's where it's going to be headed this week. So maybe you just stack, you know, even you could take guys just all in the $7,600 range. Take Finau, Na, and Kisner. That's a great way to start a lineup right there, honestly. I'll let you guys know more as I do more studying into this slate, but that will pretty much wrap this up. Put a nice little tortilla wrap around this Taco Tuesday episode. So I will see you guys later for the NASCAR podcast, and sorry about the lack of the pod last week, but you know, me and the whole family has been sick as crap, had a really bad cough and everything. Or no wait, actually I did do a podcast for PJ last week. That is right, just didn't do the NASCAR one, but yeah, that's why I wasn't able to do that for that. Believe me, I wanted to do the podcast, just coughing like a bitch. It was crazy, but finally getting back into health, and hopefully we'll be getting back into the cash. So wish you guys all great luck this weekend, and best of luck in your contests. See ya.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army Podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA, weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today and get 2 free ebooks, as well as The Secrets to Unlocking a New Level to Your Game.